Good morning. Good to see everybody back for our study of Acts. We're in the 17th chapter where we started last week. I'm going to do a little reading. We'll pick it up at verse 16 and go down through 21. So I need three readers. I need somebody for 16 to 21. Who will take that? Anybody want to? I know it's Sunday morning, and I know it rained, and it's kind of like, oh, man, this would have been a great morning to sleep in. By the way, anybody else have to turn the temperature on your car air conditioner up a little bit so you didn't freeze on the way in? Huh? No? No? Just me, huh? Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I turned the fan down a little bit. So, Janie, you'll take the first section, 16 to 21, and then I need somebody to go 22 through 29, let's say. Who'll take that? Okay, Sean or Shannon, I keep doing that, even after all these years. And then I gave you, what, through 29? So 30 comes after 29, right? 30 through 34, that's the last section. All right, Larry, here we go.
Now, while Paul was waiting for them at Athens, his spirit was provoked within him as he saw that the city was full of idols. So he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and the devout persons, and in the marketplace every day with those who had to be there. Some of the Epicurean and Stoic philosophers also conversed with him, and some said, "What does this babbler wish to say?" Others said, "He seems to be a preacher for divinities, because he was preaching Jesus and the resurrection." And they took him and brought him to the Areopagus, saying, "May we know what this new teaching is that you're presenting? For you bring some strange things to our ears. We wish to know, therefore, what these things mean." Now all the Athenians and the foreigners who lived here would spend their time in nothing except telling or hearing something new.
Paul then stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus and said, "Men of Athens, I see that you, in every way, you are very religious. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, 'To an unknown God.' Now what you worship as something unknown, I am going to proclaim to you. The God who made the world and everything in it, the Lord of heaven and earth, and does not live in temples built by hands. And he is not served by human hands as if he needed anything, because he himself gives all men life and breath and everything else. From one man he made every nation of men, that they should inhabit the whole earth. And he determined the times set for them and the exact places where they should live. God did this so that men would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from each of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring. Therefore, since we are God's offspring, we should not think that the divine being is like gold or silver or stone, an image made by man's design and skill.
Therefore, having overlooked the times of ignorance, God is now declaring to men that all people everywhere should repent, because he has fixed the day in which he will judge the world in righteousness to a man whom he has appointed, having furnished proof to all men to raise him from the dead. Now when they heard of the resurrection of the dead, some began to sneer, but others said, 'We shall hear you again concerning this.' So Paul went out of their midst, but some men joined him and believed, among whom were Dionysius the Areopagite and a woman named Damaris and others with him."
All right, thank you all very much for reading. We're picking up where we left off last week. And Paul, in verse 16, he's waiting at Athens. He's left Timothy and Silas, and he's waiting for them at Athens. And what does he see? Idols. Idols. And it says his soul, or spirit, was provoked within him as he saw all of them. Now, it may seem obvious, but let's talk about it for a minute. Why would his spirit be provoked by seeing idols. Okay, he's got the Holy Spirit within him for one thing. Billy? I'm sorry? Okay. Anger or passion. There's
looking at a city that's serving an unknown God. And passionately he wants to bring them to the knowledge of God.
Okay.
But he's also stirred up to the point that they need to know. So he's going to tell them.
But it's almost like whenever you're sick and you don't know, you've gone to the doctor to get a diagnosis. And Paul has seen all of these things that they're talking about, looking for new things, and they're amongst philosophers and worshiping gods, and Paul's troubled. And you know, the Spirit moves Paul to give him a diagnosis. And then, of course, you can make out what you want.
Well, there's always a certain amount of ignorance in our lives, and we're trying to find answers. And sometimes we come across people who think they have the answers, but you know the answer is wrong. It's not going to work. And you know there's something better. And so you want to get that word communicated. You want to let people know this is not the way. There is a better way. That's what parents are for, to learn the better way and to teach it to their children and grandparents. And sometimes when we see our children and grandchildren behaving in ways we know aren't right, our spirits are provoked within us. We want to straighten that out. We want to fix it. And I think that's where Paul is here. Ignorance always needs to be addressed. But Peter wrote about those who were willingly ignorant. 2 Peter chapter 2, and sometimes that's what we're dealing with, and people like what they're doing more than they like finding out what the truth is. And I think there were some of those here, but not all of them. Because what does it say happen when we get down to the end of the chapter? What did we read? Some joined him and believed. Verse 34, among whom were Dionysius the Areopagite and a woman named Damaris and others with them. So some believed. Not everybody, but some. So they're up here on this hill, the Areopagus, Mars Hill, it's also known as. And what are they talking about? It's like, and I'm not trying to be harsh or to be mean, but they're in ignorance and they're trading ignorance back and forth, discussing these things they really don't know anything about. Where does it say it here? Verse 21, for all the Athenians and strangers visiting here used to spend their time in nothing other than telling or hearing something new. And based on what Paul was saying, what they were hearing and telling had nothing to do with the truth about the true and the living God. One of the things that has always marked humanity, as far back as you go, if you're an archaeologist, you'll be able to tell us this for sure, that human beings have always worshipped. There's something in us that compels us to worship, to find something to worship, and it doesn't matter. Well, it matters, but even if it's something false, there will be worship going on. There'll be some kind of homage paid to a higher being, a higher power. And even in Alcoholics Anonymous, what's the thing they teach you? You've got to have a higher power. They won't tell you it's got to be God or Buddha or whoever, but they will tell you you've got to have a higher power, because getting a grip on alcoholism takes more than what you have within yourself. And so the higher power, and it's always been that way. And when we look back in the ancient cultures, we always find that they worshiped something. They worshiped someone. And it's no different here. That's one of the evidences for God, as a matter of fact. Because why would that be if we all evolved from nothing? If we came about without purpose, without meaning, without any intention. We just came up, why would humanity across the board have this concept that we have to worship? And yet that's what they were doing in Athens. And tell me about Athens. Tell me about the Greek culture. Who else do we know came out of the Greek culture? Any wise guys? Oh, wise men. There's a difference between that. You ever heard of Socrates? Pretty smart guy. I mean, there were just a lot of philosophers, the Stoics and the Epicureans, two branches of Greek philosophy. You just have all kinds of really smart intellectual discoveries coming out of the Greek culture. And here are what we might call the smartest people in the world at the time. And what are they looking into? But false gods, idols. And so what's Paul say? You've got a monument to the unknown God. That's the one I want to tell you about. Consider the irony that all these idols to gods that didn't exist, and they had one in case they missed one, and Paul is saying, that's the one. That's the one I want to tell you about, the true and the living God that you don't know anything about. And not all of them believed when he told, but it's fascinating to me that some did. And what does he say about that God? Look down at verse 24. He made everything. The God who made the world, verse 24, and all things in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands. Nor is he served by human hands, as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all people life and breath and all things. And he made from one man. Where's he teaching from now? He's teaching from Genesis. He made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth. So when someone tells you, oh, Genesis 1 and 2, that's all, that's not to be taken literally. Well, Paul is taking it literally here, that there was one man that God started with, and from that one man, every nation of mankind has come up on the face of the earth. By the way, who was the one man after Adam from whom all nations would come? Noah. It would have to be Noah, because all the nations prior to Noah were wiped out. And then God started over with one man and his family. And typically, you could say four men, but those three men that weren't Adam or weren't Noah, let me get the names right here, were his boys. So there you go. And here's verse 27. This is what God has put in our hearts, that they would seek God. That's what they're doing. People on the Areopagus, they're seeking God some way, somehow. They're trying to fulfill that compulsion they have to worship. Because they could have just said, I don't even want to talk about it. Let's go fishing. Let's go build something. Let's go whatever. But they don't do that. They're on the Areopagus, and they're talking about these things, and they're worshiping idols. They at least have the idols. That they would seek God, back to verse 27, if perhaps they might grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. Do you ever feel like that's you? I've been a Christian all of my adult life. I read the Bible. I'm familiar with the Bible, but I still feel like, how is my grasp of God doing? Do you think I really have it pretty much well in hand? Or am I still groping for God? I really think that in the end, when we finally come face to face, it's going to be... Oh.
What you're saying is, in that passage, to be still and know that I'm going to go. Just to accept, quit groping, just accept, and be still and know that he is who he is.
Good point. Don?
In a box here on earth, and I think when we get to heaven, I still don't think we're going to be able to grasp. I mean, really, are we really, even when we get there, we think, oh yeah, we're going to know everything about God. When we get there, we're not. I mean, I think he's going to be that deep and that, you know, that awesome for, you know,
You think maybe it's like
word because that's used so often, but we're not going to be able to get a hold of him even there. And maybe what we do here is what we're capable of getting a hold of him there. You know, it talks about some will be greater, some will be lesser. Some of the works you do here are not to be saved, but our meritorious works that give you a greater, and I don't like to use a standing like we do on earth. I kind of believe it's that we'll be able to get a hold of God better there. You know, those who are more faithful and putting more into it.
Yeah.
Searching out God deeper here. Doing what they're supposed to do here. You will be closer to God there than others, perhaps. You know? I mean, it does talk about the rewards in heaven. You know?
Right. Degrees of punishment and degrees of reward.
Yeah.
And every stage of life we have here, we're looking for the next stage. And when you're 5, man, if I was just 6, when I get to be 6 years old, it's going to be good. And when I get to be in kindergarten, when I start school, I'm in kindergarten. But first grade's where it's at, man. Because I've seen first graders, and they got it together. And then it's when you get to junior high, and when you get to high school. And one of these days, I'm going to be in college, and when I'm a college kid, you better watch out. And then I'm going to graduate one of these days, and, maybe I'll get married. And then it's just a progression of steps. And with every step, there comes more enlightenment. If you got your eyes open and your mind open, you can see and you can learn and you can grow. But you got to have all that going. Jamie?
Right.
Is
I've
listened to an audio version of the Bible. And there are different things that I have picked up that I didn't get just reading the word and knowing that way. So, you know, people talk about these epic battles of Moses and David, and they're like, got on a horse, went to hill, fought, and they said, like, oh, that's not very, you know, triumphant and glamorous as you see in the movies, but then having somebody read it back and hearing reflection. And sometimes we want to say, well, if you just tell me, I'll know. Doesn't work that way, does it? And we are not simple creatures. God's made us very complex, and there's a lot of depth to each one of us. And as we learn about God, we learn on different levels, and it goes deeper. And the level that you want is when the things you know about God are the things that come out in your life. You begin to behave and speak and think in the ways of God that you understand, because that's the way it's supposed to work. And we know people who know things about God, but they don't behave in a way that brings God honor. And sometimes it's us. And so here is a crowd of people, intelligent people from a culture that's given us so much. As a matter of fact, Athens, what do you picture when you picture Athens? 2,000-year-old city? Well, 2,000-year-old from this standpoint. Come on, what do you picture when you picture Athens? If you don't picture the ruins, but the ruins are magnificent. How must those temples have been when they were new, when they were flourishing, when the contractor signs off on it? You know, the city inspector's been there. Okay, plumbing's good. Sign it off. Oh, wait, I want to build a shed out back. Oh, you got to get a permit. That's that's bureaucracy, but we don't look at the bureaucracy. We look at the remains of those temples, the ruins we call them, because from what they used to be, they are now ruined. But it took some doing to build those. We still don't know how they made the pointy things in Egypt, pyramids. Still don't have a clue. The construction that was done down in, what's it called down in Peru, Machu Picchu? I want to say Pikachu, but that's Pokemon. And he didn't have anything to do with that. But when you see the construction of things all over the world, and sometime when you're home and you don't have anything to do, because I know you don't have anything to do all the time, Google ziggurats, and find out how these things are built all over the world in different ways. It's almost as like there was one people at one time, and they just spread out all over the world and took construction techniques with them. Anyway, that's a whole other thing. But what we're talking about is a culture where people are talking about God, but they don't know anything about God, but they're compelled to do it anyway. They're compelled to search out God, and we are too. And I find myself sometimes, I study and I think I know things, but I'm still groping because I know it, but I can't really get it done. And I'm struggling with my flesh because, like we talked about, well, we were just talking about it on the front row here. Our flesh is the thing that keeps holding us back. Spirit's willing. Flesh is weak, and Paul is dealing with that here. Yes?
I think that we're confined here on earth by time and space, and also by the devil and his influence. And it's good to think about what it's going to be like when we get to heaven, because that's our destination. You know, that's the whole purpose. And it's really hard for me to imagine not having the restraints that we have here. Can you imagine not being tempted by Satan? Can you imagine waking up every day and that's gone? And, you know, your path is clear. There's no stumbling blocks there. There's nothing to feel guilty about. There's no choices to make that you wish you hadn't made. And I can't fathom life without time, because everything that we know is measured in time. And, you know, we're confined to space. And we were talking about what Jesus would be like, or what, you know, when we get there, what our relationship will be with him. It's just so incredibly difficult to consider life in any form without those constraints. And I think once we're free from that, I think the world that we will be in heaven, whatever, you know, however wonderful that's going to be, I think that will be something that we can simply not fathom. We don't have anything to compare it to. We don't have any, because we're human, and because of all these constraints, and because of death and sin and all the things that we deal with, I can't even imagine a world without that. But to me, that's what we need to seek. That's where we want to be. That's where we want to get. Can you imagine? It's hard to even put it. We don't have any terms for it.
Right. And sometimes we'll say that. We'll find ourselves in a circumstance and we say, "What? I just don't have words." And even if they're, because we have words and we have thoughts, but that's how you can. And sometimes you don't have the words to convey the thoughts, even if you had the understanding. And we are extremely limited, and we are also governed by misconceptions and preconceptions and trying to get past those, seeking out truth. And when I think about what happens here on the Areopagus, it's interesting to me, and it's almost amazing that there are people here in the day when all those temples were new and glistening and gleaming, and they hear a word about a man who was crucified, who rose back from the dead, and they believe. And I'm asking myself, is that because these are some people who've really sought to know truth, and they've realized it's not in these temples, Yeah, these things are glorious to behold, but there is no truth for my soul in these temples. There is no satisfaction in what I need to deal with my guilt and my sin and my fallenness and my imperfection. There's nothing in idolatry that makes me feel like, okay, I'm whole again. It's just a matter of trying to keep up and keep out of the way of the gods, really, is what idolatry was all about. But then when you come to Jesus, it's like, oh, I don't have to have a temple. I am his temple. He lives in me. All he wants is for me to live a life of honor and respect and love and compassion and mercy and gratitude. That's what God demands of us, and it all comes through faith, because we won't do any of it perfectly, so we have to believe. And in the believing, what does John say about our faith? Faith is the victory. Well, that's what Hebrews says. Faith is the evidence of things not seen. But John says, well, let's go back over there and take a look at it real quick. Remember John, he wrote Revelation from exile. And he says this to us in the first letter, in the last chapter. Is it the last chapter of the first letter? Chapter 5, verse 4. 1 John 5, 4. For whatever is born of God overcomes the world. And this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith. And who is the one who overcomes the world but he who believes that Jesus is the Son of God? That's what happened on the Areopagus. That's what we just read about in Acts 17. All those temples, all of that idolatry, all of the worship, all of the money that flowed into that, just like at Ephesus where the silversmiths made the images of Diana and the temple, and they were so afraid of losing that for 2 hours they cried out, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." She didn't even exist. And here are hundreds of people, if not thousands, crying out, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians," because they were afraid of losing something. It wasn't truth they were after, something else. Preston?
I'd like for your opinion on this. Of all the scenes that we see from the time that Jesus is conceived of the Holy Spirit, born from virgin, is born, John the Baptist goes out and preaches, Jesus is baptized and starts his ministry. Of all those scenes, even to the scene, I guess, keeps sticking in my mind about the centurion that we talked about last week and what he witnessed, what he saw, what it encompassed. And here on Marsville, you know, they're teaching and we're talking about all these different philosophies. Of all the scenes, even up until the death of Christ and you know, the church being established. Of all the scenes, which one is the most impactful?
The most impactful to me? To me, it's John 17, where Jesus is praying to the Father. And this is right before his crucifixion. And what does he pray? But I want to show them the glory that we had together before the foundation of the world. To me, that's Jesus asking his Father for a personal opportunity to show his friends, his loved ones, these guys that have been closest to him, and I think us too, by implication, what that's like. When you see something and you're just so impressed with it, and you think, well, I want somebody to see this. Why do we take pictures on vacation? Well, we take pictures because we want to remember, but what else do we take pictures for? Do you post them on Facebook so you can look at them? No, you post them on Facebook so everybody else goes, look at this, how fantastic. Did anybody see the rainbow? How long has it been since we've had a rainbow? And a couple nights, it was a Thursday night, I think. There was a little bit of rain, and there was a rainbow that just would not quit. And it was fantastic. It's like, I want everybody to see this. And you stand at a sunset, and you look at that sunset. Man, I wish everybody could see this sunset the way I'm seeing it now. And sometimes you're driving along the road, and you say, I can't see it. We gotta find a high spot. Well, it'll be too late here in a minute to see. And it's just, you just want to see it, and you want other people to see it. That's Jesus in John 17. And that's Paul on the Areopagus. He knows God. He's trying to explain God. He's doing a really fantastic job of explaining God compared to the idols that they have here. And he says, the real, true, and living God, he's not worshipped by people building temples to him. And if you're a thinking person, even in first century Greece, and you've never had any introduction to the true and living God, you ought to be able to think that out for yourself. You know what? All this didn't come from somebody who needs us to build him a temple. There must be a transcendent God above this. And then when Paul comes and he says, let me tell you about the God who has conquered life, and not just conquered life, he's conquered our sin. He's paid for our sin. You don't have to be guilty anymore. That's it. That's what I need. And people are still desperate for that. Not everybody. Not everybody wants that, but people, some still do. Jamie? And I think people are willing to create the hollowness for one reason. What does the hollowness do for us? It gives us the freedom to do what we want. The hollowness of idolatry gives us the freedom to do what we want. In other words, if I want to do what I want bad enough, I'm just going to say, well, okay, there is no God. And here are the evidences for why there is no God. And then you find all these crazy things that don't make any sense. And you say, oh, that's evidence that there is no God. There's no purpose in the universe. And if there's no purpose in the universe, then I can do what I want. But they don't follow that through. Because you go back in the 20th century and you see the results of that. About 100 million dead. Through what? Through atheistic Marxism. I'm not trying to get political on you. I'm getting historical on you. You go back to the 20th century and people, well, Hitler was the worst. He killed 6 million Jews and plunged the world into war. Yeah, but if you look at what communism has done, you do the research on how many people have died and been oppressed. Read Alexander Solzhenitsyn. Read some of the guys who came out of that, about the millions of people in the Soviet Union, the old Soviet Union, and in China who died. And it was based on the idea that, well, there is no God, and so we can do what we want. And that's what atheism is all about. We want to do what we want to do. And sometimes that's what idolatry is all about. You shape your religion, create your own religion, because if you can create your own religion, like Joseph Smith, okay, I threw that out there. You can pretty much do it the way you want. Right. Now, he's not the only one. It's not like I just threw out Joseph Smith, like he's the only guy that said, it's been happening all over the place. It's still happening. People still read the Bible, and, well, I know that's what it says, but. You ever heard him? I've had so many people say that to me. I know that's what it says, but we're still doing it. We're still coming up with our own religion. We're still coming up with our own form of idolatry. We haven't carved out an image out of wood. Like, I think it was Jeremiah talked about that. You go out in the woods and you get you a tree. And here's what you do with that tree. You take some of it and you burn it in the fire to heat your home. And then you burn some of it to make some bread. Then you take another piece of it and you carve it into an idol and you bow down and you worship it. And it's like, Jeremiah, that's really stupid. He says, that's the point. It's the same wood. Some you burn to heat, some you burn to cook, some you carve into an idol and you bow down and you worship it and you deck it with gold. I remember going, one of the things we had to do in Bear Valley was go interview people in other religions. And so we went to a group of Hare Krishnas that were there in town. And they took us down in the basement. They were very hospitable, very kind, very polite, and they were very open to show us so many things about their religion. But they took us downstairs, and here was this Hindu image of a Hindu god, life-size. It was all decked out with clothing, and in its hands, I believe, were like some grapes and a couple of oranges or something like that. And we were asking about that and said, every morning, they come down, and they remove all of the clothing, and they wash that idol, and then they replace the clothing, and they provide food for breakfast and food for lunch. It's never eaten. I know, but that's what they would do. That was the practice that they were in. And it's like, cool. Really? Yeah. But we do the same thing. Whenever we come to a point in our lives where, okay, I know this is what the Bible says, and I know I'm not supposed to do it, but I really want to do that. So I'm going to make myself God for about 5 or 10 minutes here and do what I want. And we just, God, would you mind not looking for a while? I want to be an idolater. I want to put myself first. And I'm not saying it's exactly the same, but it's based on the same principle. It's the same idea. And so I think that's the idea. Well, I know it is for me. Groping after God, still trying to get it figured out, because there's so much that I don't know. If we could percentageize it, how much I know about God, that percent, and how much I don't know about God, that percent, what percentage would you venture to put on how much you actually do know about God? I'm not asking you to give you a number. I'm just asking you to think about it. Okay, a cup of water versus the ocean. I like that, except that a cup of water is probably too much. It's, yeah.
All things will be revealed for those who reach heaven.
Yes.
All things. I mean, there are several places. Another little comment about Hinduism. Their God is not named Hindu. It's a better name, starts with a B. But they believe in multiple gods, and they even believe in the God that we worship. They believe there are multiple ways to inherit eternal life. You know, they're very different. They're very wrong, but they're very different.
Right. And it's interesting that you have find so many commonalities among so many religions, and almost without exception, you have the commonality of morality. That's another evidence of God, that there is always a moral code. Jamie?
So you said something earlier that bothered me a little bit when we were talking about creating the idol and doing that thing hollow, and that people took that as a way to do what they wanted. I disagree in that. I think for the average person, they're trying to be genuine with the knowledge that they've got around them, and that's just how they do it.
Okay.
If somebody else took that opportunity to capitalize and say, hey, I'll do that. And that's why it's ever so important for us to go out and evangelize, is to correct the misinformation that is out there. But I think for the person, me, on the street looking, if you've got something that's working, okay, I'll let someone hear you. But I don't think for everybody it's trying to say, oh, yeah.
And you're absolutely right. Good observation. Because here on Areopagus, just like if you could go back in time and there's George Washington laying on his bed and some guy says, all right, we're going to slit his wrist and let this bad blood out, what would you do? You'd say, oh, listen, I'm no doctor, but I know that's not going to work. Don't do that. He needs that blood to fight the infection. That's what we want to do with ignorance. We want to correct it. And that's what the true and living God does. He provides us. He gives us the Bible, of course, but what does he give us as well as the Bible?
sit here and know that and not share it.
Right.
Well, I mean, my goodness, I think I'm going to make it better if I don't share it. Like a playing on the bell or sounding the gong, you know, just empty. You know, I've got to put what he's given me to use for
Who is the magician? Very famous, very popular magician. He and his buddy have a show. Tall guy, short guy? Penn and Teller. I think it was Penn. A guy, is he the tall guy, Penn? Or is that, okay, Penn. A fellow approached him and backstage and said, I'd like to share the Bible with you and offer you a New Testament and talk to you about Jesus. And he treated him very respectfully. And then he made the observation later, said, if that's what you believe, that there is a God who will condemn my soul to hell eternally because of my sin, and you know a way to get around that, and you don't tell me, how much do you have to hate me not to tell me that? And that's the point you're coming up with. It's not about, yeah, you people in Athens are stupid. It's, man, can I help you out here by giving you some truth? How many bells have we had, by the way? One. All right.
When he talked about he was being interviewed, I think it may have been about gay. But he said, and his comment was, I love you and let's face your rejection.
Right.
It goes right back to what you were saying. How much do you love me if you don't tell me that you love me?
And it's the same when you're raising kids. How much do we love our children? Do we love them enough to, I got to stop that boy or that girl from doing that again. I got to talk to them. I'm too tired. I don't want to talk to them. I'm just going to let that go. Well, no, you're the parent. You got to do something. You got to correct bad behavior. You got to straighten things out. You don't have to be a tyrant, but you got to teach them and train them and bring them up in the way of the Lord. Jamie, do you have a hand up? No? Anybody else have a hand up? All right, this is probably a good place to quit. We'll come back next week. Wrap up. You've seen my wrap-ups. Wrap up the 17th chapter and move right on to the 18th chapter. So if you want to read chapter 18 in preparation, we'll, Lord willing, be getting into that and looking at the establishment of the church in Corinth. Any observations or questions as we close? Appreciate all your commentary. It's been great. All right. Lord bless you. We're dismissed.